This is lecture 16 of the Practical Ministry Skills course, and we're talking today about moving on. This is chapter 10 of the Pastoring the Nuts and Bolts book. Our key verse is, I planted the seed in your hearts, and Apollos watered it, but it was God who made it grow. 1 Corinthians 13:6. Paul is writing to the Corinthians. He was the planter of that church. He is the first one who came there and preached the gospel. He got the church going. He put the seed there. But then God moved him on to someplace else. And Apollos came in. And Apollos followed Paul and watered the seed, helped the people grow, helped the people learn and become disciples. Then the time came. It's not clear whether Apollos was still pastor in Corinth at the time this was written, but he's not now. And somehow the time came when Apollos had to leave and somebody else came in. It's just something that happens. It's something that we often don't want to think about, especially if we're the one that planted the church. But it happens. There will come a time, if you are leading a church, if you're leading a ministry, there will come a time when, unless the whole thing just closes down, then you need to move on. And if it does just closed down, you have moved on anyway. So nothing stays the same. Let me tell you my own experience, because I have quite a bit of experience at moving on from churches, because as I have mentioned before, the ministry, the denomination that I'm in, is one where the pastor or where the bishop appoints pastors and puts them in different churches. And if you're in a long ministry, a long career, then you're most likely going to be in a number of different churches. So, I planted the seed in your hearts, Paul says, and Apollos watered it. But it was God who made it grow. And that's the thing to remember, is that God is the one in charge. And it's His church, and He knows what it needs and who it needs when. When I came out of seminary, after being an engineer for a couple of years, I felt called to seminary, got my seminary degree, Master of Divinity, and when I came out of there, I was appointed to two small churches a few miles apart in the countryside, the rural part of the state of Maryland on the east coast of the United States. These two churches were established back in the days when people traveled by horses and buggies. They were certainly close enough that anyone could have driven a car very easily to either one, and if they were being established, if a church was being established in that area now, they certainly would not have put it that close to another church of the same denomination. But they were there, and the practice in those cases was to have two small churches that were close together. You let them split hiring a pastor, or the bishop appointed me there, and they both went in paying portions of my salary, and I split my time between them. I did had church at one, and worship service at one while the other one was having Sunday school, and then went to the other one, and the first one had Sunday school, and the second one had church. I was there for about 2.5 years, and I enjoyed it. I loved it. They were great people. But then, all of a sudden, the district superintendent called and said, we need you to consider going. I'm not sure he said consider. He may have just said, we need you to go to this other church where they had appointed a pastor who was understood to have recovered from cancer, and then this pastor had a relapse and died. And there was a pastor living near the ones that I was serving that could take over for them, but could not, for various reasons, be sent to this other one. So they said, all right, you go to this other one, and we'll let this other pastor take the two that you've been at. Now, I had poured my life, as the saying is, into those two little churches. I had plans. I thought God had called me there. I thought there were great things going to happen. I had just had this idea of how God was going to grow and work this area. People were moving into the area, and it was all going to be wonderful. And all of a sudden, I had to shift from these people are my responsibility, and I'm in charge of them, and I need to take care of them, and two, okay, the bishop is asking me to go to these other people. Now, that doesn't mean I'm abandoning the people in the first place. It means God, working through the bishop, as we faithfully believe, was saying I was needed over here, and I had to tell myself, okay, two things. First, if God is calling me away from these people, He's not going to leave them stranded. He's not going to leave them helpless. He has somebody else for them. And one of the advantages of the kind of a appointment system where bishops appoint pastors is that churches are not left for a long period of time without a pastor. There's good and bad to those, but that's just what was going on in there. It helped me understand, okay, these people are not going to be left helpless. God has somebody else for them, so they'll be taken care of. Second, I have a responsibility to these people I'm serving, but at the same time, if God is calling me to this other church that suddenly doesn't have a pastor because of the relapse of cancer, then do I not have an equal responsibility, at least potentially, to those people? So, and see, in this case, I didn't have a whole lot of choice, but in many cases, in our setup at that time, there was a choice, and I could have said no. But instead of saying no, this is where I belong, I had to pray and recognize that, well, maybe God is shifting my responsibility over here, and He's going to take care of them. Maybe it's time for Paul to leave and Apollos to come in. Paul's done the planning. Maybe it's time for Apollos to come in and do some watering. So that was the first church that I left. The second one, we had gotten into a place that the second one was a fairly small church, but in a kind of a growing area, suburban area, and we were there, I don't know, 7-8 years, I forget exactly. Anyway, it started to grow. It started to build up. I was able to start a second service instead of, this was back in the early 80s and 1980s, when introducing guitar music and so on was a new thing in the American church, and I was able to start a new, what they called contemporary music service. And it started to grow, and people started to come in, and it seemed like it was things were going great, and we were even talking about building a new, bigger building. We had even called in an architect and gotten preliminary drawings, and it just kind of exploded under me. I think what happened was that the leadership of the older established congregation they were happy to have people coming in, but these people didn't turn into clones of themselves, and they had other ideas, and then that was uncomfortable. But then when there were enough of them that they began to get outvoted in the board meetings and so on, then that was too much for them. And so they no longer had the power to stop this other stuff from going, but they still had enough power and influence to kind of mess everything up, and it all fell apart. And it's a sad thing. And an interesting sidelight on that is that I had mentioned, I'll get into that later, in a later lecture. I forgot about that. But anyway, I had one dear, sweet little old lady tell me, "God has appointed me to make sure that you are removed as pastor of this church." So it's amazing how these kinds of things can happen. And so it became clear that the vision of that church was moving one way, where I felt God was moving me was moving a different way. And the bishop, the district superintendent, felt that for the good of all concerned, a pastoral change might be in order. And so I moved to another church. And I was there for 10 years. And that was probably the happiest time of my ministry. That was when the children really grew up most of the time for that 10 years. And it was a wonderful time. But it wound up at the end with a situation where a young unmarried Sunday school teacher found herself with child, and I asked her to step down from that position of leadership and no longer be a Sunday school teacher. And her parents became very angry at that and stirred everybody up in the church, and the leaders of the church chose to try to appease the people who were complaining and who were upset rather than to stand by what I felt was the only appropriate and godly decision. But they didn't stand by me. They chose to appease the people who were complaining, because, you know, they were, if he doesn't leave this church, we will, kind of thing. And so they tried to appease them. And again, the denominational leadership decided that was time for me to move on. 10 years was a long time in my denomination to be in one church anyway, so it was probably overdue for a move. And so I went to another church, and this one was, on the face of it, all kinds of wonderful, and I really enjoyed my time there. There was some great stuff that went there, but when I first went, it was interesting. One of the first things that happened was they said, "Tell us your vision for the church." They had had a longtime pastor who had led them in the idea that the pastor was the one who received the vision from the Lord and passed it on to them, and they wanted to know my vision. And so I didn't have an immediate vision. I'd just gotten there, didn't really know anything. So I said, "Give me some time," and I prayed, and I the Lord finally gave me what I thought was a wonderful thing, and I presented it to them. It was a way of expanding the influence and expanding the size without having to put out money to build a new church and all kinds of stuff. And I presented it to them, and I said, "Okay, here's what I believe is the vision." And they said, "No, that's not it. No, not that vision." So they already had something in mind that they wanted, and I wasn't it. A couple of years after that, the longtime pastor who had been there for a while never really left and led, or was implicit at least, in, let me put it this way. A new church started down the road, and a bunch of people from this church went there, and that pastor was a part of it, and some of the other leaders, his proteges, were a part of it. I said the way that it was, here's how I described it, was two plants in the same pot, and sometimes if they're both going to grow, they can't stay in the same pot. You have to separate them out so they don't get root bound. And so that's how I talked about it. I prayed blessings over them as they left. And God did wonderful things after that. God showed up in great ways after that in our service. And then all of a sudden, I've never been quite sure what happened, but some of the key leaders just all of a sudden decided that I was the wrong person to be there. And they made things miserable until the bishop came in and moved me again. So I seem to have that effect on congregations. I don't know how, but and I don't want to scare you off of being a pastor, but these things happen. This is what happens in churches, okay? Sheep bite. If you're going to be a shepherd, know that sheep bite. My last full-time congregation was a very nice one, and I enjoyed it a lot until it just came time to... it became obvious that it was time to consider a retirement because the Lord was giving me thoughts more to go toward a new kind of a ministry, toward a writing ministry, rather than continuing in a local church ministry. So you may or may not ever have to leave a congregation or a ministry as long as you are young and healthy enough to handle it. But at some point, you will probably get too old for that to keep going on, and you'll have to consider the thought of retirement. Some consider it earlier than others. The lady says, "That was so much better than most of the other sermons you've given." And the pastor's thinking to himself, "Only 1,042 Sundays left until I can retire." That was not my attitude. It's not that I couldn't wait to retire. But I felt, for me personally, I felt like God was getting me, it was steering me toward the writing. I had never, maybe it's just my own approach to ministry. I know a lot of ministers are able to write while they serve churches, but I never could kind of find that split. So I felt like it was time to start devoting myself to writing, and at the same time I was finding less and less enthusiasm for new things that God could do with this congregation, and I didn't feel like it was fair to them to continue that. So I felt like it was time to retire, and eventually I did. The point I want to make here is make sure if you are thinking about retiring, and you probably have to remember this for 40 years, but when it comes time to think about that, make sure you're retiring to something, not from something. Don't retire to get away from something. Retire to make more time to do something. The way I like to put it is that many people work, perhaps many of you work a job to make the money that you can live on so that you can do your ministry. For me, the job that I worked to make the money was running a church. And now it was time to leave that and do the ministry of writing. I was, of course, running the church. There was lots of good ministry that happened in those years as well. But retire to something, not from something. Don't leave a church because you got angry. Don't leave a church because somebody hurt your pride. Don't leave a church thinking that they will run after you and beg you to come back and make all kinds of promises. Don't leave a church thinking that you can better yourself, take a step up in your career, if that's the only reason. All of these are bad reasons to leave a church. And there are a lot of other bad reasons to leave a church. The good reasons to leave a church are because God is calling you to something else. God is letting you know that He has something else in store for you. It may involve, as a byproduct, any of these other things, a step up in your career or more money or getting away from an issue or whatever. But the only good reason to leave is if God is calling you. So how do you discern whether God is calling you to leave, whether God wants you to leave? Don't try to do it all by yourself. This is not one of those decisions that is best made all by yourself, because in almost every case there will be so much conflict in your mind that you won't know, is this God calling me, or am I just trying to convince myself that God's calling me so that I can do something I want to do or get away from something I don't like? These are the times when you really need to not only pray, but pray and discuss with your spouse if you're blessed to have one, with other people that, you know, mature Christians that you trust. Maybe perhaps it's wise in that case if you're discussing with clergy colleagues, if they are not in your same denomination, or at least not in your chain of command, if you have that kind of a thing that could influence, in case it's a situation where you don't want somebody in some other position to know that you're thinking about it, you be careful about who you talk to that might get back to them. Use wisdom. But don't try and figure it out on your own. Pray about it. Submit it to others for their thoughts. When the time comes that you believe that you are supposed to leave, it's very important how you do it. And basically, it's the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If you were a member of that congregation, a member of that ministry, how would you want the pastor, the minister, the leader to leave? How would you want them to handle it? If you were the minister who was going to step in and follow that person, how would you want them to leave the situation? So leave a blessing behind. Always try to give a blessing. I saw a cartoon once of a, and I think I mentioned this in the book, I couldn't find the actual cartoon to put on here, but it's a pastor at the pulpit, and through the window you can see a taxi sitting outside with the motor running, and the pastor has the suitcases sitting down just behind the curtain where the congregation can't see it, and the pastor is saying, "I've been wanting to say some things to you." Do not take your last sermon as a chance to unload and on everybody and complain and tell them all why they're wrong and you're right and all these kinds of things. Don't do that. Just don't do that. It's not good for you. It's not for them. Not good for them. Leave a blessing. Leave an attitude of blessing. Even in the difficult situations where I knew that there were a lot of people that wanted me to leave, then afterwards, it's amazing how people will seem to forget that they did that, and they'll contact you and be all friendly. And I kind of came up with a phrase of saying, you know, they'll say, "Oh, we miss you," and or give, you know, and I'll say, "Well, we miss, you know, give our love to," and what I say is, "Give our love to all the good people of such and such a church." And of course, they think that I mean all the people are the good people. I mean, there are some good people there. Give our love to them. You know, and I'm sure all of them thought they were being good. They were doing what they wanted to. But leave a blessing. And on a very practical basis, figure out, if you were a brand new person, not knowing anything about this church or this ministry, and coming in to take over, what would make it easy for you to take over? And get that stuff ready. Put it in a file that says, for the new leader, for the new pastor, for the new minister. and put that stuff there. Don't tell them how you thought about certain individuals. Let them figure that out for themselves, because they may have totally different relationships. Throw out the stuff you know they're not going to need, so they don't have to waste time going through it. Leave them what they'll need in an easy way for them to get it. Now, sometimes, I hate to say this, a pastor has to be removed, and because they've done something wrong. In my book, I have 8 suggested policy statements, or 8 things that need to be developed into a policy. It's always better to develop a policy before you need it, so that you're not thinking about particular people and personalities and relationships don't come into the issue. But figure out a way to make sure the church is protected from loss or damage that may be brought on by the pastor's misconduct. Decide what kinds of transgressions warrant disciplinary action. Decide what will constitute a substantive accusation. There's no sense me reading that back to you. You probably just read it. But I think it is important. Pray that it never has to be applied to you. Pray that you never have to sit on a committee or a board or a panel helping deal with some other pastor. But pastors are human, and these things happen. So the time will come, unless you just, the Lord takes you home while you're still serving, the time will come when you'll have to figure out how to leave a church, when to leave a church. And remember that God's got that, like He's got everything else. It can be a really difficult time, but He's got it. And I'll see you next time.